Thank you and good morning. Today I'm going to tell you a little bit about dragon fruit. Like I said, my name is Ramiro Lobo. I'm a farm advisor with the University of California Cooperative Extension in San Diego County. And for the last several years, how many of you have been to Southern California? All of you. All five of you. Well, if you've been down to Southern California, you know that water is one of our biggest limitations in terms of agriculture. And unfortunately, some of the largest crops we grow are water thirsty, being subtropical trees like avocados and citrus and a bunch of others that do require a lot of water. So small-scale producers are desperately looking for alternatives to switch to that use less water. And dragon fruit has been seen as that alternative. And so far, our the work that we've done and the expansion of the industry, we demonstrate that it does have great potential for commercial production to substitute some of the crops that are going out, especially on the small acreages. So the pitahaya, or dragon fruit, is a member of the highly cereous genus, and is a vining or climbing cacti that is native to tropical America, pretty much from southern Mexico to northern South America. Erroneously, people think it's native to Southeast Asia, primarily because it got popularized there, but it was taken by the French from the tropics to Southeast Asia, and it just thrived so well that it became it grew wild and just all over the place in Southeast Asia. It is known as strawberry pear in the U.S., dragon fruit in Southeast Asia, and pitahaya in Mexico, pitaya in Central America, and also in South Florida. But for us in Southern California, we call it pitahaya to distinguish from another cactus species that is called pitaya, which is the fruit of a columnar cactus called pitayo, you know, with kind of a male gender in there. There are several species and hybrids of hylus areas available in the U.S. Up to pretty much 70 accessions have been reported, and about anywhere from 15 to 25 species identified in the literature. But proper identification is a major challenge to some of these, because it's kind of hard to really identify them exactly what they are. And a lot of work needs to be done on that. We've done some DNA work on them over the past few years to see what gene pool, you know, what genetics we're working with, but still more work needs to be done on that. It is grown primarily for the fresh market, although industrial uses have become give it more potential for value added. It's used as a food colorant for in the processed food industry, as a dye for yarn in the organic trade, and for the production of chips, chewy bars, smoothies, and a bunch of healthy-type drinks. And so the potential is there for value-added activity. Why pitahaya? As I mentioned, it's got great potential as a water-efficient crop, and for us, that's key in San Diego. I mean, growers in San Diego County paid the highest cost for irrigation water pretty much in the world, the tune of about $1,200 per acre feet. And with that kind of price for water, there are very few crops that we can grow commercially that will make you money. There is an increasing demand for new, exotic, healthier fruit, and some work we've done on the post-harvest and composition work of dragon fruit show that they have high antioxidant activity, mainly the darker red or the color pink, color flesh fruits. And so it's pretty comparable to pomegranate. So in that sense, the demand for this fruit is increasing. It also makes a great landscape plant. I mean, with lawns going out, people are planting more desert plants. And this one produces an edible fruit, so it makes it very appealing to residential areas. In terms of where pitahayas or dragon fruit are grown, map shows you all the regions where we know or have seen reported activity of dragon fruit being grown. Largest planting areas are in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia. I mean, there is reported hundreds of thousands of hectares there. The Philippines are getting in, and also talk to people in South Africa, Morocco, Israel has been supplying the European market for quite some time already, mainly with the Solanaceros or Hylocereus megalanthus type, which is a Colombian type pitahaya. In the U.S., in South America, Colombia and Ecuador have been growing the yellow pitahaya, mainly for the European market as well. And Mexico, a scattered production in the Yucatan Peninsula, also in Guadalajara and in Jalisco and Colima states. And in the U.S., it's been mainly Florida, California, and Hawaii. U.S. production really sort of took off with Paul Thompson, who's a founding member of California Rare Fruit Growers, and he's the man responsible for many of the hybrids that are quite popular today. Some of the most highly cultivated hybrids were created by Thompson. Later, Ed Valdivia was another big promoter, enthusiast about this crop. Most people, however, first experience with dragon fruit has been with a white flesh variety. And more often than not, that experience is not a pleasant one because the taste of the fruit doesn't necessarily match the looks. And so they people always like, is this it? Kind of a response to it. But then we've started introducing other darker red variety, darker flesh varieties. And there's been a kind of a renaissance in terms of flavor. I mean, the range of color goes from white to bloody red, and a bunch of hybrids in between that pack a lot more flavor. Also, the Colombian pitahaya, the Solanaceros, the megalanthus, is regarded as the best tasting of them all. Production systems, another appealing aspect of this is, I saw this in Nicaragua, where they use it in addition for fruit production, is an erosion control tool, and for some of the topography in Southern California, this would be another advantage, because agriculture happens in very sloppy areas, slope, and so that would be very helpful as well. That's kind of a commercial planting in Nicaragua. That's a greenhouse high tunnel grower in Southern California. So with our project, I was telling Stephen earlier, the first question we had, the only question we had when we started this project was whether they would grow in full sun in Southern California. There were a lot of rumors that you couldn't grow them in full sun, that you wouldn't grow them without hemp, that they wouldn't fruit without hemp pollination. I mean, all kinds of things. So we wanted to we acquired varieties and planted kind of a replicated trial with about 18 different plant material that we got. And wanted to document the pest and disease incidents, see how much water they took. We were trying to replace existing crops, so we wanted to document how much water they take to produce. Work on the post-harvest side of it because there was a lot of need for information there, and then develop some marketing and economic information that growers could use to if they wanted to get into this crop. So we identified initially 18 varieties, and the initials in parentheses chose the origin of them, except that the ones that are listed as Florida, that material came originally from San Diego. There was a nursery in Florida, went to San Diego, collected just about everything they could, took it to Florida, and then they had a party, I guess, and decided to assign names to them, you know, and they came up with these names. I wish I had invited to that, had been invited to that, but I guess they like rock or some kind of a, but the name is really appeal, and this variety, American Beauty and some of the other clones that went to Florida were the result of the work that Paul Thompson did as far as on breeding work. Our original planting was at the South Coast Research and Extension Center in Irvine. Since then, it started out as a replicated trial, but a variety of problems, we could never really get any consistent data out of the trial, so we just used it as a screening experiment to identify varieties that adapted to that climate and then farm out to other trial sites, which are in the Bigger Flags in Fillmore, Santa Barbara, where we're now running a variety trial under an organic production system, and also in the Coachella Valley, where we're also doing another variety trial just to see how they adapt to the desert environment. And still, Our biggest experiments are in the irrigation trial, variety trial, and the CHE trial is at the South Coast Research and Extension Center. The other flags represent areas where it's grown. Establishment, we planted them on a 10x6 spacing, and we manage it as an orchard. The plants are trained to grow vertically, and then we adapted a kind of a concrete mesh basket on top of the trellis of a single 4x4 post and train the plant to go through it, and then you end up with a structure like that. New trials, though, we are comparing trellis systems with the single spalier system to a single post system, trying to see what the water requirements are, because they both adapt differently to topography. Some of them do well in flatter areas, and other, you know, in more sloppy terrain. Pests, gophers are the biggest problem. I mean, they will chew your plants up. Rabbits, they would just eat them up as well. Ants stunt your plants. Birds are perhaps your biggest economic problem, because they will hit you in the pocket. They will eat fruit that is ready to harvest. And the other thing is, they splatter seeds on the adjacent fruit, so your marketing expenses go way up because you have to clean up your fruit before taking to market. Flower and fruit development, it takes about 20 days from a bud break to the day the flower opens. It's a night blooming cactus. Flower opens one night and it's viable for one night. So when you have multiple varieties, cross-pollination, bees are the ones that pollinate the flowers. But synchrony in terms of bloom is critical, because you want to have flowers that open up at the same time, because it starts, some of them open at 5 p.m., others open at 10 p.m., and the timing, some can be pollinated in the morning and some at night. And some, late at night. So you got to... So in terms of what we've observed and what information we've collected from the variety, this shows you that the varieties that did better in our field trial or observation trial are physical graffiti, Soul Kitchen, and Delight, Delight and physical graffiti, again, are the work of Paul Thompson. Lisa is another selection from Nicaragua that did quite well. How much time do I have?
2.5 minutes.
Okay. In terms of flesh color, you can see that it's all over the place. Different shades of red. The pink, hot pink color flesh are the ones that pack the most flavor. In other words, it's more instant gratification. On the white flesh varieties, the flavors tend to be mild. And that has to do with the low acidity on the fruit. So, and most people usually harvest them too late, so you end up with a bland tasting fruit. On the upper end, on the darker red, the fruit is more acidic, so you can afford to let it go a little bit longer on the plant, because the acids go down, the expression of flavor is better. Seasonality, they all peak kind of around August, September, late August, early September. And they flush several times over the year, like the red flesh varieties would flush pretty much from June until January. On the white flesh varieties, the production is concentrated between August and September. You get about 90% of your fruit in two harvests. Pink flesh varieties have a longer season as well. And then the Megalanthus, or the Colombian type pitahaya, is a winter fruit. So I tell people that if they could master, you know, the art of growing that particular variety in a controlled environment, they could definitely make some good money, because it is harvested December, January, February. Packing and marketing, you want to make sure, post-harvest is critical, so you want to make sure you have a clean cut at the base of the fruit and avoid any cracking, because this will be conducive to decay and will reduce the shelf life of the fruit very drastically. They are packed in 6, 10, or 20-pound boxes, and this is fruit at the LA wholesale market from Vietnam. You can see the big differential between organic and conventional, and this is one of the niches I think that we in Southern California could tap very easily, because these plants don't get any rain at all during the harvest and fruiting season. So what we found out is that most varieties in our trial adapted well to growing conditions. Obviously, some of them did better than others. Most produce well without hand pollination. Most varieties produce without shade, although some of it would definitely benefit from it. Fruit size and quality was consistently good, good marketable yields. But more work is needed, and we've also we're conducting a lot of different studies to look at that. In terms of economics, in our part of the country, establishment costs can be high. We're looking at $15,000 to $25,000 per acre, depending on what type of trellis system you want to go to, or what you pay for plant material. The value per acre can be significant. We can easily obtain 20,000 pounds to the acre, you know, with very conservative estimate in terms of fruit production per planting. There is downward pressure on prices. More imports from Southeast Asia, now coming in from Nicaragua, now Florida is producing some of the red varieties that were only found in California. So prices keep going down, but still look very promising. And if you're marketing direct, the price is really good. I mean, $6 to $8 per pound. I don't know what else you can sell for that price that is legal. Red flesh varieties are selling at a much higher price than the white flesh varieties. And again, that we believe that the market is definitely turning red because of the antioxidant activity, the appeal of dark color fruit, and the price is just going to be differential is probably going to increase. So this got great potential as a commercial crop, as we said, and we're excited about it. I mean, I think talking to someone from Florida, they tell me Florida is expanding quite rapidly as well. So that's it.
Thank you. Time for one quick question.
Not specifically that I know of. We have it as part of our trial, but again, it's very limited funding to dedicate time specific to that variety, where the bulk of the growth is with the other varieties.
What was the question?
Oh, the question is if anybody's working on the yellow pitaya.
All right, thank you.
I think it's got great potential, though, because it is a winter fruit in our environment.
Thank you.